I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Good morning, everybody. I would like to welcome everyone to Public Hearing 12.
People with disabilities are in the highest priority groups for COVID-19 vaccination, meaning they were meant to be at the front of the queue.
There are issues that arise out of the vaccine rollout of great importance to people with disability.
But a draft report by the Disability Royal Commission has blasted the federal government's vaccination rollout as seriously deficient and claims that people with disabilities were overlooked in favour of aged care residents.
Concern about the lack of accessible information concerning the vaccine rollout.
With only half of all people on the National Disability Insurance Scheme fully vaccinated, the Commission has also warned governments against easing lockdowns while these vaccination rates are so low.
The delay in vaccinating people with disability was having a significant adverse impact on people with disability.
Today, how people with disabilities fell through the cracks of Australia's vaccination rollout. It's Tuesday, the 12th of October.
My name's Dave Belcher. I'm a disability advocate with Community Disability Alliance Hunter.
Alongside his work as a disability advocate, Dave is also a city council member in Lake Macquarie, just north of Sydney.
Lake Macquarie is a large regional centre. We are surrounding a beautiful saltwater lake and have lots of outdoor sporting activities, lots of fishing, lots of boating.
Dave has a condition called lumbosacral agenesis, meaning he's missing vertebrae in his spine. He also has a narrow trachea and was born with one lung. Can you tell me a little bit about your regular life and how your condition affects it a bit?
You know, the term wheelchair bound gets thrown around pretty casually. That's not a term I particularly like because it's not really accurate. I use a wheelchair to get around in my community. My wheelchair is a tool that I use to live my life. I'm an outgoing person, like going to the pub, having a beer, going to sporting events, going to concerts, stuff like that, and all stuff I've, been able to do, fairly easily with mates, I've, drive myself, have large amounts of independence to be able to get out there and do whatever I need to do. I'm employed, so fairly active in my community. That's been what my life has been for 30-odd years.
Mm. I've talked to a lot of people about how, March last year affected them, that kind of fear when the pandemic first started rolling through Australia. With your condition, how did that sit with you? Do you remember when you first realised how serious this was all going to be and how it could be for you?
Honestly, it was the first time I'd really seen myself as vulnerable. I'd been a person living with a disability, my entire 38 years. And until the, coronavirus starting to really spread in Australia, I'd not considered myself to be, vulnerable due to my disability.
If Dave did get COVID, his body would most likely not be able to cope.
It'd be like anybody else getting COVID except multiplied, because I don't have the functional ability to cope with a reduced respiratory capacity. If unvaccinated, I don't think I'd survive. But with the virus and what I've seen it doing to people who are immunized, compromised, or have respiratory difficulties, or have, and I hate the phrase, but underlying health conditions, it's been deadly.
The risk of getting really sick with COVID has meant Dave has not left his home in almost 4 months, pretty much ever since the Delta variant pushed New South Wales into a harsh lockdown.
There were suddenly cases in my local neighbourhood and so that has had a direct impact on my ability to leave the house, go outside, go for a walk. Even though it's supposedly safe, I absolutely don't feel safe in myself to be able to go for a walk outside on any of the footpaths or shared pathways that we have around here. So, yeah, it's been a pretty confronting and stressful time over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, I guess.
But something that kept him going was the fact that he had heard that the Australian government was prioritising vaccination for those with disabilities. For him, this was great news.
I thought it was exactly what they should be doing. You target those most at risk and, you roll out the vaccines as warranted and as needed in those communities. Clearly, that wasn't what was occurring there.
Hello, Laura.
How are we going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Luke Enriquez-Gomes is Guardian Australia's social affairs and inequality editor. So, Luke, can you tell me about how people with disabilities fit into the government's vaccine rollout?
So in phase 1A of the vaccine rollout, the first group, the highest priority, included people with disability who live in shared accommodation. And by shared accommodation, what I'm talking about are people who live in what are sometimes called group homes. These are homes, residential homes of about 4 to 6 people, sometimes up to 10 people, and a much smaller group of NDIS participants who are living in aged care as well. So in total, that's about 27,000 people. And the plan was for in-reach teams contracted by the government to go in and vaccinate the residents.
Why was it only people with disabilities who live in disability care homes that were selected for phase 1A?
So we know many people with disabilities are at a heightened risk during the pandemic, and that means, you know, they're more likely to get sick or die if they get infected with the virus. And so the risk is, you know, heightened again if you live with more people and have carers and staff coming in from the broader community. So it's kind of a similar idea as what happened in aged care homes, really. So it makes sense, I suppose, that these people would be prioritised in a vaccine rollout.
And what about people with disabilities who don't live in these facilities? What was the plan for them?
So younger adults with underlying conditions and people with a disability were in phase 1B, which is the second phase, as the name suggests. But there was a bit of confusion and sort of it was unclear exactly which people with a disability did qualify. Some people had varying reports of their success in, I guess, being considered in phase 1B. But the way it worked is people had to, you know, organise this themselves through a GP or go to a vaccination hub until the government in June said all NDIS participants were eligible for the jab. So NDIS providers are companies that provide services to people with disabilities, including, you know, support workers and also running these so-called group homes. And around this time, the NDIS providers were also organising hubs with NDIS participants to sort of coordinate vaccination for them.
Right. So the idea is that under phase 1A and 1B and this rule with NDIS in June, this should cover it. People with disabilities shouldn't really be falling through the cracks.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there would be some people who say that even under that plan, there were still issues, people could still fall through the cracks. But that was kind of the thinking, was that this would cover it, as you say.
So did this work? Were people with disabilities at the front of the queue for vaccines?
In many cases, no. You know, in people living in the so-called group homes, the residents there were left waiting for months and no one really knew what was happening. So I spoke to David Moody, and he was the chief executive of a peak body for NDIS providers at the time. And he said that for months he kept getting calls from people, from providers saying, you know, when are these people showing up? It was clear that something wasn't working. That's what he said. I spoke to Kate McRae, who is the chief executive of another provider, Able Australia. And she said, you know, from February to the last week in May, it was radio silence. So she said that in the last week of May, they called one of the government's vaccine providers 17 times without getting a single return call, and everything just went to an auto-answering system. We also know from a hearing of the Disability Royal Commission in May that this was an incredibly worrying time for people with disabilities. One person who gave evidence at the hearing was Uli Kaplan. He's 25 years old, and he's a self-advocate with an intellectual disability and chronic illnesses. He lives in a two-bedroom unit in residential care.
Do you want my honest opinion?
Yes.
throw politics out the window, stop saying that you're going to be, we're the best country and we're doing better than this and doing better than that. Just give us the vaccine. I spent 3.5 months locked in my unit because for my own safety, because I had 4 cases next door in my house. Just do your job.
It wasn't just people in disability accommodation who felt that they weren't being prioritised. Dave isn't on the NDIS, meaning he doesn't have a service provider to coordinate his vaccination for him. So he went to his doctor in July.
As soon as I knew they were sort of targeting the priority categories, I went along to my local GP and went, hey, I think I should get vaccinated, you know, given my history and stuff. And they just utilised the online drop-down form thing, and it came up, no, I wasn't in any of those categories.
Dave then tried to organise this himself through the federal government website.
I went online to book the Pfizer, basically in hope that at some period in the future I'd get access to it. Well, and because at that point they weren't allowing people under 60 to access AstraZeneca, I was told basically I had to wait till September this year to access a vaccine.
Essentially, even though his condition means COVID-19 would most likely be deadly, Dave felt like he was slipping through the cracks.
If you're not accessing a service provider, which I don't use any service providers, or you're outside of the NDIS, which a lot of people with disability are, then, you're kind of left to fend for yourself.
So, Luke, it sounds like service providers and advocates and people in the community were sounding the alarm for months and months about the lack of vaccines. What was happening here? What was going on with the rollout?
So a lot of what we know about all of this comes from this bombshell draft report released by the Disability Royal Commission in late September. And the report found that in March of this year, the government had, quote, deprioritised this group in favour of aged care residents. Mm. And so then people with disabilities, their advocates and providers were left in the dark about this decision until a Senate hearing 6 weeks later on the 20th of April. You know, this was part of the Senate COVID-19 inquiry looking at the government's handling of the pandemic. And Federal Health Department officials appeared at the hearing to give evidence. That included the Health Department's Associate Secretary, Carolyn Edwards, and also the Department Secretary himself, Brendan Murphy. Basically, at the hearing, Carolyn Edwards revealed that they had been focusing on aged care residents before people with disabilities in residential care.
And so within 1A, there was actually phases. There was priority within
there was a range of cohorts,
group, and that went to aged care and then secondly to disability.
There was a range of cohorts, not originally phased in that way, but when we discovered that aged care residents was a more difficult and lengthy process than we had anticipated, we did focus on aged care residents.
So it sounds like they weren't just treating all of this 1A, this first phase, as equal. There were kind of phases within the phases. Why did they do this?
Yeah, that's right. So you have to remember that aged care residents had been ravaged by COVID in 2020. Hundreds of people died. And as Edwards said, because they're more elderly and tend to live in larger homes, essentially, they're more at risk. And this was backed up by the Secretary of the Department, Brendan Murphy, who said age is the biggest factor in terms of risk.
The risk of severe illness and death is significantly greater in the residential aged care population. The single biggest risk of death and severe COVID is age. And whilst we did intend originally to do disability and aged care together, the complexity of aged care meant that we have to prioritise to get that group protected.
But it's a little bit more complicated than that because the draft report from the Royal Commission also found the Department of Health initially factored in that there were about 6,000 residents in disability care rather than about 27,000. So essentially they underestimated how many people they needed to vaccinate by, you know, about 20,000 people.
Wow.
Once the government had realised the sort of scale of the challenge and the contracted vaccine providers started facing what Brendan Murphy called limited capacity and limited workforce, the department chose to vaccinate the nearly 200,000 aged care residents before winter came. But it just didn't tell anybody that there had been a shift in priorities.
Mm. So what did this mean for vaccination rates for people with disabilities?
So at the Senate inquiry in April, the Health Department's Associate Secretary, Carolyn Edwards, was asked about the vaccination rates.
1,640 doses administered to a 1A disability cohort, which would be residents. As I said before, it's been a very minor part of our program to date.
So she revealed that overall, less than 7% of residents had been vaccinated. 192 people overall were fully vaccinated, which left, you know, 25,000 residents unvaccinated, despite the fact they were in the top priority group.
The original intention, correct me if I'm wrong, was to have that done by the end of March. Is that right? So it was to have 1A done in 6 weeks.
I don't recall that having been...
Yeah.
So it is important to note that up until this point, we didn't have a sense of what the rates of vaccinations in disability care were, because they were lumped together with aged care, and that made the figures sound much better. But when you break it down, according to the Commission, less than 1% of all doses distributed between the 22nd of February and the 21st of April of this year went to people with disability.
Next, how Australia's patchy vaccination rates for people with disabilities across the country could put lives in danger. So, Luke, you mentioned only a very small amount of vaccines went to people with disabilities in the first few months of the rollout. What has happened since then, and what are the vaccination rates like now?
So if we look at the rates among disability group home residents now, 67.5% are fully vaccinated and 75.9% have gotten one jab. That's across the country. But, you know, compare that to 90% of aged care residents who've received one dose. And technically, both groups are supposed to be in the same priority. So amongst this sort of small cohort of disability group home residents, about a quarter still haven't had one dose. They're unprotected. And the concern from people I've spoken to is essentially that those unprotected residents are the people who are most vulnerable, people who are unable to leave their home to go to a vaccination hub and you know, really need some kind of home visit. You know, that was the plan all along.
Do we know how many people with disabilities are vaccinated overall across the country?
Some pretty recent data showed that 48.5% of NDIS participants who are aged 16 and over have been fully vaccinated, and 33.2% of those aged between 12 and 15 who are also on the NDIS have received one dose.
Under half of people on the NDIS have been fully vaccinated, and that actually doesn't take in all people who have disabilities, right? Not everyone with a disability is on the NDIS.
That's right. So there's about, I think, 450,000 people on the NDIS, and, you know, the estimate is that there's about 4.4 million people in Australia who identify as having some kind of disability. Now, they're not all at a heightened risk of COVID, but clearly, these are people that will face difficulties in getting vaccinated.
These difficulties go beyond just how many vaccines are available. It's the accessibility of the whole process of vaccination that concerns Dave.
I know of an instance where there was a young woman who was supported by her mother, went to the vaccination clinic, and, you know, you've got to fill out the form, right? Pretty standard. And this mother was told that she couldn't enter with her daughter to help her fill out the form. And so you had a person there who, with an intellectual disability, just not understanding the questions and not having support there needed to make, you know, informed answers. And, you know, there's people there also with who have anxiety issues and are already stressed because of this pandemic anyway. And if there's not someone there to assist and support them during that time, then it's really, really difficult.
You've got to keep in mind as well that, you know, these rates can't all be credited to the government, the federal government. At some point, realising that the vaccines weren't coming, the providers, NDIS providers, parents and carers took matters into their own hands. And once the rollout expanded, they organised vaccines for their residents through local GPs and state health departments.
So So, Luke, we know that in September, the Disability Royal Commission released that bombshell report. What did they have to say about the rollout overall and about these low vaccination rates that we have now?
Well, overall, it found that the Federal Health Department's approach to vaccinating people with disabilities had been, quote, seriously deficient. And they said that the government had failed to consult with disability advocacy groups when they, you know, organised the rollout plan. They said that the plan was created without the government appreciating or addressing the challenges associated with administering a vaccine to people with disability living in residential settings, and they're also their support workers. And I guess another thing to keep in mind is that the release of this report was kind of unusual. It's a draft report, and that is normally not what the commission does. It will release a report after it's gone to the Governor General and the government has had a chance to properly look at it. But I think the reason they released it is because they wanted to get on the record as quickly as possible what had happened here, with a mind to informing the debate when states look to open up as well. And it's the second report into COVID that they've released, which is highly critical of the government. Mm.
How did the government respond to this report and these types of claims?
So a day after the report came out, the Secretary of the Department of Health, Brendan Murphy, was quizzed about the findings, and he essentially denied that people with disability were deprioritised. But he did say that rates for people with disability had been slower.
But it is true that in the very early days, we gave a greater priority to residential aged care when the complexity of the aged care rollout was appreciated. We did not deprioritise disability residents. They remain a priority the whole way through the program.
A spokeswoman for the Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, defended the government's track record here, especially when it comes to lives lost during COVID-19. The spokeswoman pointed out that cases and lives lost among NDIS participants were, quote, significantly lower than the national average. And she pointed out that people with disability continue to be prioritised for vaccinations. And she talked about the range of measures that the government has introduced in order to vaccinate people with disabilities, including, you know, 4,000 sites as part of that InReach program we talked about, and the establishment of more community-based vaccination hubs for people with disability. And the spokeswoman basically said that the government is looking at the recommendations and the findings and it will consider it formally once it's been delivered to the Governor-General.
Eventually, Dave was able to get vaccinated when the advice around AstraZeneca changed. But his second dose isn't scheduled until the first week of November, and he's been advised not to bring it forward. That means in New South Wales, he doesn't have certain freedoms that vaccinated people have. Plus, with businesses opening up and regional travel on the horizon, there could be a lot more COVID-19 spreading in his community.
A lot of people are already isolated and their, you know, community and interaction and involvement is already limited, right? So what does it matter if that one day a week that the, you know, people don't end up at the club or don't end up at the local swim centre? No one's going to miss them, except we will. You know, the disability community will. We're the ones that will be left there.
And the Royal Commission said it would be, you know, grossly unfair if any people with disabilities who had not been given the chance to get vaccinated were denied freedoms when states do open up. And essentially they said people with disabilities, you know, they didn't choose not to get the vaccine, and now not only will they be unable to go to certain places and do certain things, they're bearing the brunt of the risk if COVID-19 cases do rise when things open up.
At this late stage, what can governments do to ensure the safety and well-being of this population?
Well, I mean, the Royal Commission sort of says that the federal government should, quote, use its best endeavours to ensure no state or territory significantly eases restrictions when the 70% threshold is met. Unless, of course, all people with disabilities have and appreciate that they have the opportunity to be fully vaccinated. That's kind of the Royal Commission's take, is that there just hasn't been enough effort put in, I think, is what they're trying to say there, to vaccinate people with disabilities. And so you've got to really make a big effort now. Do absolutely everything you can. Leave all, don't leave no stone unturned to ensure that all people who want the jab, who've got a disability, can get it.
It is an access issue, and the government has failed time and time again on providing readily available vaccines to people who are most in need. So it is incredibly dangerous for the government to just forego people with disability for the sake of broader community. We don't want to be left behind, which is exactly what's happening now. I mean, think about any other group of people in society that were deprioritised of the vaccine and the outrage that would cause.
That's it for today. Thank you to Dave and Luke Enriquez-Gomes for their time. You can read more of Luke's reporting on theguardian.com. We put some links to his articles on the Disability Royal Commission draft report on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, Joe Koning, Raf Katuma, Ellen Lee Beta, and Camilla Hannon, who also did the sound design. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and myself, Laura Murphy Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.